came to make his presentation. I'm just trying to connect.
Yeah, my topic, as you find it on the sheets in your hand, religion and custom are not the same. Sacred traditional states and religious human rights in contemporary Ghana. To summarize what I want to do. Now, we all know that what we call the nation state is something that emerged after the colonial or through the colonial experience, and then after independence, many African nation states arose. But these nation states brought together smaller ethnic states that existed prior to independence, and constituted them into nation states. So if you like, what we have in most of Africa are, if you like, conglomeration of former independent states, however small they were. Now, these states were state based on philosophies that were religious in a sense. And that made the states themselves sacred, and also their rulers sacred. So in a sense, now there are sacred states that are brought together to form a secular nation state. So tensions continue because there is plurality of values. And this kind of pluralism is very complex. Complex in the sense that we have the ethnic, former ethnic states and their values. And the colonial experience also included the Christian missionary work. They also left their own values on African societies. So what we have now is that after independence, these traditional states were not, as it were, abolished completely. At least they exist, and their rulers have become the rallying points of ethnic solidarity and identity. So in Ghana, for example, many people have sense of identity that is divided between their Ghanaianness and their primary ethnic heritage. So I, for example, I am a Fanti, but I am a Ghanaian. But I'm also a Christian. And in this situation, loyalties also tend to be divided in a way that is competitive. So sometimes, if there is something that the nation state demands of me, depending upon the way I evaluate the situation, I might invoke my fantiness against my being a Ghanaian, or probably even my being a Christian against my being a Ghanaian. And that is why in certain situations we have had people who want to champion their religion even against the nation states, because that identity is primary. Now, the tensions come up most often at certain important points. For example, if there is a festival, currently the people of Accra, the capital city, the indigenous people, are going to have their festival very soon in June, July, and August. Now, preceding this festival, they impose a ban on noise making, don't make noise, for about 30 days, sometimes 40 days. And it happens in most of the former traditional states in Ghana. Now, this imposition of the ban is supposed to have come from the African traditional religious belief. But then everybody must comply with it. Christians cannot, the Pentecostal Christians cannot worship loudly. Everybody. So what it means is that sometimes there are clashes. The last, some time ago, even a minister of the gospel drew a pistol to threaten the mob that came to his church. This has implications for religious human rights of citizens, but not only the religious human rights of citizens, but also has implications for the rights of the indigenous communities to assert themselves, to claim their rights. So I'm not a lawyer, I'm a historian of religion. I don't know whether I can say that in that case we can talk about clash of rights, communal rights and individual rights. For example, as a Fanti living in Accra, I'm not a Ghan. I do not subscribe to the Ghan traditional religion. Am I expected to comply with that as a citizen of Ghana? Does the Ghan, or the Accra Traditional Council, does the council have authority to compel me to obey that? Will that not be an infringement on my human rights? And if I do not obey, will that not be a kind of an attitude undermining their right to ascertain their collective indigenous right? Now, these are some of the things. Now, the argument I present here is that now this conflict is not just a conflict in the air. It has underneath it conceptualization of what is secular and what is religious. I know that in Africa, almost totally, there is no this sense of dichotomy between the religious and the secular. But what is happening is that in these traditional areas, the custodians of the values and the opinion leaders are beginning, that's what I've discovered for the past 8 years or so, are beginning to come up with the idea that, well, we have a difference between custom and religion. Now what we want you to do is custom. Custom, it is not religious. Now, but what they call custom has a very thick overlay of religion. For example, things that have to do with chieftains installing a chief. It involves a lot of rituals, blackenings to sacrificing sheep and other animals, libation prayers, resorting to practices that suggest that you are in communication with the spirit of the ancestors. So it involves ancestral veneration and all that. So these things, conventionally, we may find them to be religious. But the custodians are saying, no, it is not religious. Now, my further investigation among some of the groups, especially the Akan, but also the Ghan, the Accra people, is that traditionally, they had a sense of what is religion and what is secular. That is, I'm not saying that they had this categorically stated, but for example, if you observe those who speak in defense of traditional religion, see, we have two categories. Those who speak for the state, believing that the state, that is the traditional state I'm talking about, the traditional sacred state is the strongest representative of the traditional religion. And probably our constitution gives that impression too. Why am I saying this? In our constitution, there is a provision for religious constituencies to be represented on certain boards. Now, when it comes to the traditional religion, you always find that they make chiefs, you see, their representatives. For example, there is a Christian council representative, there is the Islamic council representative, and then there is a chief. Ostensibly, they don't say this in clear terms, but ostensibly, the chief, the traditional chief, is representing African traditional religion. But some of the chiefs I know, they also go to church. They go to church, they have been Christianized, see. Now, the second group that speak for African traditional religion are people who belong to cults and shrines. I mean, they are actual practitioners, probably like my sister here, saying, this is my faith. It is not because she's been born into the ethnic group's traditional religion, but I still have made a choice that this is my faith. And they also speak for the traditional religion. So if we say that they are talking for traditional religion and they are religious, fine, they are concerned about preserving the integrity and the dignity of African traditional religion, ensuring that they attain the same level of respect and equality as Christianity and Islam. But the chiefs and opinion leaders of the traditional communities, they are concerned about ethnic solidarity, the survival of the ethnic state. So they speak from a point of view of, if you like, politics. But their politics is so suffused with religion. I came upon a piece of work done by Professor Hackett, and she was framing the question in this context as having to do with the protection of the human rights of religious minorities, especially these African adherents of African traditional religion have become minorities on their own land, so that to protect their rights. Now, in the light of that, she continues also to talk about, when we come to discuss about these things, we have to take into consideration the history, especially the local history, the politics, and other things that continue to shape discourses of this nature in contexts. Now, in the light of that, then I want to say that this conflict that is happening, and that seems to be sometimes expressed in terms of the clash of rights, have come up because the adherents of African traditional religion, whose lives are bound together with all other things, are reacting to a long history of, for me, injustice from Christian missionaries, whose interests sometimes coincided, you see, with the interest of the colonialists. And so with time, the traditional religions, including the state ones, came to be sidelined, see. And now, having access to the language of human rights, they are beginning to stake their claims. But there are two groups, as I said, the members of the cults and the shrines, and then the opinion leaders and the chiefs of the traditional state. Now they are now trying to assert their rights. But then, the way the traditional state opinion leaders are doing it is still in the context of the influence of the Westphalian culture carried to Africa by the Christian missionaries. In the Westphalia agreement, it is complete total separation between church and state. So even where this does not work, because of Christian influence, African leaders are now trying to say that, yes, there is difference between custom and religion. To bring it to, I just want to end this by drawing attention to an interpretation of this by an African philosopher who lives in the U.S., Professor Kwesiri Redu. Some of you may have read his works. Now, he claims that some of these things that we find in traditional African politics do not have religious intentions, that they are purely secular and political, and that the keen observer or the person who cares to investigate, if he investigates these things, he will find that behind even the most stupid taboo is something very sensible to address a societal need, to protect a societal interest or something, but that they are not primarily concerned about the religious value. In that sense, then, I want to propose that then we accept what these traditional leaders are telling us on their own terms. It is not always that we can accept, for example, categories, religion and secular, from a Western European point of view. For example, when we come to the nation state, if the president, if we elected, let me even say the United States of America, if we elected the president And the president does not take the state oath, would he still be president? Or can the president assume office without going through some of the state rituals? And are those rituals necessarily religious? At least they have religion-like character, but they do not become necessarily religious. So can't we accept that in the context of Africa, in the attempt to clarify some of these things, they can adopt their own definition of what is secular and what is religious. And for them, taking a chief through ritual so that he can assume office is secular, is political, and not religious. Thank you.